No intro just yet because we're actually going to start this podcast with some big news, some huge news.
What's that, Barth?
It's been in the making for about a year now.
You have news, Barth? Tell me the news.
There is news. Applies to both of us. See, well, this is the part of the podcast where I normally do a rambling opening because it's very tough to open a show that doesn't have a name.
And now we're rambling to open a show that has a name.
That is right. There is now a name for this. It is the Sports Hub Patriots Podcast. So let me welcome everybody into the Sports Hub Patriots Podcast training camp preview. Myself, Alex Barth, Matt Dolliff, 98.5thesportshub.com.
Only took us 2 years to come up with that.
Sports Hub Patriots Podcast, though. We got it. You can subscribe to the Patriots audio feed wherever you get your podcasts.
Very on brand for us.
If you subscribe to that, not only will you get this podcast as soon as it drops, which will be daily during training camp, multiple times a week during the season, you'll also hear some Patriots audio clips when players talk on shows at 98.5 The Sports Hub. Those will go up there as well. Some press conferences too. So again, Patriots audio, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. But let's jump right in, Matt, because we want to keep this thing nice and tight. We have a lot we want to get to.
Let's do it.
And basically what we're going to do, we're going to take a look at each position group on the Patriots, at least as the roster is structured heading into camp. And we're just going to do rapid fire, just a quick take on where each position group is at. We'll go. So it's not alphabetically. I call it alphabetically. Like when I say football positions are in order alphabetically, it's like the order that everybody knows, right? Quarterback,
sure.
Running back, wide receiver. So we'll go.
Do like fantasy style almost.
Fantasy style, Madden style, however you want to put it. So we will go football alphabetically, starting with the quarterbacks. It's Mac Jones, Brian Hoyer, and the rookie Bailey Zappe. Your thoughts on the quarterback position, which you will specifically be covering during camp. You will be focused in on the quarterback position with your content for 98.5thesportshub.com.
Yeah, I feel like I really got to focus in on the quarterbacks this year because it's still the biggest story of the team.
And yep.
Like, there's been all this talk about the coaches, all this talk about the depth of the roster, but at the end of the day, it's all going to come down to how Mac Jones plays. If Mac Jones takes a huge step forward, like we tend to see very often with guys in their second year, you want to see that second year leap no matter who your quarterback is. If he does take that leap, if he plays markedly better than he did last year, I don't want to say it's not going to matter what's around him, but they can make it work. They can win a lot of games if Mac Jones is playing at a very high level and Bill Belichick has everyone focused. So I think that's by far the biggest story of the year, regardless of what's going on at receiver or offensive line, defense, whatever. It all comes down to the quarterback, and I don't know if that's fair or not in the NFL these days. And I know Bill doesn't want it to be all about the quarterback, but that's really what their season is going to hinge on. If they're going to make a deep playoff run, it's going to have to be with Mac Jones playing at an extremely high level.
And Bill raving about Mac Jones Tuesday morning, dramatic improvement is what he said. And obviously a lot of what Mac Jones did this summer, the workouts, the individual workouts, throwing with receivers was all highly publicized. So he seems ready to hit the ground running. And you're right. I mean, it's that year two jump. You only get one shot at it. It's a big deal for any player, regardless of position, but quarterback especially. So that's, and then I'll just throw in two because I agree with everything you said on Mac Jones. I'm excited to watch Bailey Zappe. There I said.
You really wanted me to bring up the Zappe. You're the Zappe guy. Tell me about Bailey Zappe.
The kid can play.
So you think he has a legit shot to like unseat Brian Hoyer, be the backup this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think it could be something like it was last year, the year before, where, you know, Brian Hoyer is kind of the second quarterback because he's the veteran and all of that. But
yep,
if they need to go to that second quarterback in the game, it could be Zappe.
Like, right.
I think it could be one of those setups.
And if Mac Jones does take that leap forward, maybe he doesn't need the veteran Hoyer like holding his hand behind the scenes.
You would think that this is the last year. Yeah, I think that, you know, I could see a situation where Hoyer dresses as the backup on game days, right? But if there's ever a situation where Mac Jones can't dress, like Bailey Zappe would get the nod there.
Before we move on, I want to circle back to Bill's comments today. We're talking about the dramatic improvement of Mac Jones. That honestly stood out to me. That was encouraging to me because if Mac Jones wasn't taking that leap forward, if he was looking just about the same as last year, Bill would say, well, he's got a long way to go. Like he wouldn't.
Everybody's,
I don't think he'd rave
to get better.
Right. Yeah. I don't think he'd rave about Mac Jones. He'd be evasive and cryptic about it if he wasn't happy with Mac Jones. So I think based on that comment, he's very happy with the quarterback right now.
All right, running backs, Damian Harris and Ramondre Stevenson back as the 1-2 punch. You've got the rookies, Pierre Strong Jr. and Kevin Harris, J.J. Taylor back in the fold as well, and then James White is on PUP to start the season.
This is probably their deepest position group, you could argue. You know, right? I mean, James White back. They drafted two more running backs. They've drafted three in the last 2 years. Damian Harris still here. And, I mean, Damian Harris has a little bit to play for. So, I mean, I'm expecting big things out of him. I think he's already seeing that the writing on the wall that they're probably not going to give me the money I'm looking for. But if I have a big year, some crazy team will give me a crazy amount of money. So I'm happy about him. I'm excited to see what they look like, hopefully, in a full season with James White back. And I do like Pierre Strong Jr., the guy they drafted out of, what is it, South Dakota State?
Yes.
South Dakota. Yes. That's like, all right, hopefully I got the right state. But yeah, I mean, like, I think you always need to have depth at this position. We saw a few years ago, they were forced to put Cordarrelle Patterson out there. And it's like, yeah, you don't need to invest big-time draft capital or a ton of money at the position, but you do need bodies. You do need NFL-caliber players, and they are flush with those at that position.
See, I don't go that far because James White, we'll see what he can be. There's the report from Mike Florio that he's still having some trouble moving around.
Okay.
After that hip surgery, hip injury and the surgery last year.
Right, so the third down back thing is going to
be
the question.
I think early down back, Damian Harris, Ramondre Stevenson, that's one of the best 1-2 duos in the league in terms of early down backs. Kevin Harris is probably a redshirt guy, but I think he could factor in there if you needed him. J.J. Taylor's an early down back. He's a change of pace back. I don't put him in that pass-catching category because such a big part of that role is pass blocking, and he's going to need to make some big strides to be able to play that role a significant amount.
So maybe I have more confidence in Stevenson than you do, maybe, to fill that sort of role. It wouldn't be the same exact thing as James White, but I think he could be a pass-catching guy.
So here's where I'm going to be careful. I think Stevenson can succeed in that role. Will they give him the opportunity to do so? That would be a trend breaker. They generally separate those two positions. The only guy that comes to mind right away who played a significant amount of snaps at both is Rex Burkhead. Now, Rex Burkhead was a comp for Ramondre Stevenson coming out. So maybe that's not unfair.
Okay.
They would have to break a trend. Now, the reason I'm going to be careful in saying this is I was the idiot last year at this time when everybody was all excited about Ramondre Stevenson banging the table. They don't play rookie running backs. They never play rookie running backs aren't picked in the first round. We'll see Ramondre in 2022. Don't get your hopes up.
Especially when he had that fumble in one of the first two games.
And then he had a great season. And look, were they forced to play him out of necessity a little bit?
A little bit.
I don't think they would have traded Sony Michel if they weren't confident in him. So I'm not going to sit here and say they're not going to use Ramondre as a pass catcher, but it would break a trend. Now, here's the thing about it. The other option, if James White can't go, actually there's multiple options, but one of the other best options, if James White can't go, is Pierre Strong in that role. And I really like Pierre Strong in that role, I do, but that's a trend breaker. Again, outside of Ramondre Stevenson, non-first round pick running backs generally don't play in this system. James White had 14 touches as a rookie. So,
but we're really talking about the pass catching back that gets redshirted. They'll play an early, like, it's not like a uniform thing, but they'll play an early down back as a rookie sometimes.
More, but it's still not a ton. They between J.R. Redmond, Bill's first year, and Ramondre, they had no rookie backs who were taken outside of the first round have over 100 touches.
Right. I mean, like, Stephen Ridley didn't play. And Shane Vereen, they didn't play them as rookies.
Ridley played the most of any of those guys.
Really?
And you don't think of him as playing a lot.
No, he didn't break out until the following year.
Right. So that's where it gets interesting. The one other guy here, and as we transition into wide receivers, this is a good transition. Will Ty Montgomery factor here? He did in the spring. He's listed as a wide receiver, but you can't put stock in the two letters next to the name on the roster sheet. It just doesn't mean that much.
I just see him as a gadget guy. Maybe he'll get one or two touches a game. They'll try him on a jet sweep and plays like that, you know.
I think there's a chance. I think he will compete for the third down pass back role. And look, they generally split this between two guys, right? They have a main guy. Like, even when it was James White, you had Rex Burkhead spelling him at times. You had Brandon Bolden spelling him at times. They like to have a second guy they can mix in, like a 70-30 split, sort of. Maybe Ty Montgomery's the 30, not the 70.
Mm-hmm.
If Pierre Strong really shows out, or if they do trust Ramondre in that role. But I think Ty Montgomery is going to factor into the running back equation in that third down back role. It's a role he's played before. It's a role he's played well. I think it would be crazy to completely write him out of this conversation.
Sure. And, like, I'm not saying all these guys are particularly good. I just think, like,
right,
we're not going to see a repeat of the Cordarrelle Patterson situation. We're not going to see them having to scour the scrap heap in the middle of the season to find a running back because they're going to have enough guys, I think. That's all I was saying. But ideally,
sure,
you have James White back to 100% and doing what he usually does. And you have Ramondre Stevenson taking a step forward. And ideally, that's what you got. Because I still don't expect much out of the rookies. It would be a pleasant surprise if we saw anything out of Pierre Strong or Kevin Harris, who they drafted this year. But I think as long as the guys that they bring back are healthy, I think they're in good shape.
All right, let's do the wide receivers. Nelson Agholor, Kendrick Bourne, Lil Jordan Humphrey, Jacoby Myers, we mentioned Ty Montgomery, who's a hybrid. Trey Nixon, Devontae Parker. Slater's listed here, but remind me to bring him back up later.
He's a hybrid. Tyquan
Thornton and Christian Wilkerson.
Oh, they still have Christian Wilkerson.
They still have Christian Wilkerson.
Yeah,
yes.
Look, they're definitely deeper at the position. Like, they don't have that. Like, we kept saying they're gonna get their Jamar Chase. They're gonna get their Jamar. So it's like, all right, so they gotta get like the next Randy Moss, Jerry.
Yeah,
Rice. That's what Jamar Chase is. Like, no, but it's really not that so much as Mac Jones needs like his go to his version of like Edelman. You know, like Julian Edelman, great player. He's not like a Randy Moss. He was a great player because he was Tom Brady's trusted target.
Right.
He was Brady's binky. You know, like, and Mac Jones needs a binky, and he sort of had one with Kendrick Bourne last year. So maybe Bourne's that.
I think it's Bourne.
But even if Bourne continues to be the binky, they brought in Devontae Parker.
Yep.
Jacoby Myers, another year in the system. I think he'll at least be the same that he was last year, if not a little better. And Agholor, like, there's nowhere to go but up for him. So, I mean, they have a deep group here, and, like, I do like depth at that position, especially the Patriots, a quarterback like Mac Jones, a coach like Bill Belichick. He's going to want to spread the ball around. He's not going to want to have to feed the same guy the ball the whole game. So, I mean, I feel a lot better about this group than I did even last year, certainly better than 2-3 years ago. So they're definitely trending up at that position, but they might need someone to emerge as, like, the true go-to binky, whatever you want to call it, for Mac Jones. It looks like Bourne is the leader in the clubhouse there, but, you know, I think it's really just like a bunch of depth and a bunch of number twos right now.
I would say Kendrick Bourne had an 800-yard season last year in what felt like a feeling out process at times. I might be higher on Kendrick Bourne than most people, but I really think they're scratching the surface with him. I think he can be a player. I think he can be a top 30 receiver in the NFL. So that's a number one by definition.
Yeah, I was gonna say, he's a number one on the worst team in the league.
There's two really interesting questions at the wide receiver position to me. And it's kind of, you know, a tale of two ends of the depth chart. You have Agholor, Bourne, Myers, and Parker. Those four guys competing. And they're all good. All four of those guys will make the team. But in terms of snaps, how many reps each guy's going to get, they're competing for probably two or three spots as like those main wide receivers, right?
Yep.
Tyquan Thornton's his own thing. He's probably a red shirt, but he's a roster lock.
I didn't even mention Thornton.
Well, so they're going to keep the four I mentioned and then Thornton. The question then becomes, do they keep a sixth wide receiver, and what does that look like? If Ty Montgomery needs to be on the team to help with the third down pass back role, but they see him as a wide receiver, well, that makes it tough. If they see him as a – because then you're talking about a seventh wide receiver. On top of Matthew Slater, right?
Right.
If they see Montgomery as a back, well, I think you have three really interesting candidates for that sixth wide receiver spot. Trey Nixon, who had a great spring, who gives you speed. He's a true slot guy. He has a rapport with Mac Jones. You have Lil Jordan Humphrey, who gives you more of a size option. The thing those two guys have working against them, though, neither of those guys play special teams. Like, they just don't. It's not like they haven't done a ton of it. They haven't, period.
That's going to be a problem.
Where Christian Wilkerson doesn't have the best hands. I like some of his traits as a wide receiver, but you got to be able to catch the football. But he's he's a really good special teams player. We've seen him kind of live on Matthew Slater's hip at camp last season. So
that's true, yeah.
I don't necessarily know that one of those guys is definitively better than the other two. They all give you something different, and it comes down to what does the rest of the roster look like? Which of those three makes the most sense to keep at that point? That's going to be, as we get into the later stages of camp, that's going to be a really interesting discussion as we round out the roster and do the bubble.
Yeah.
Do they want a sixth wide receiver? And it's not going to be a who's the best. It's going to be who do they want on the roster?
Right. Well, Trey Nixon to me is a guy that he has sort of Edelman potential, and I don't mean that he's going to be a Super Bowl MVP. I just mean that he's going to stick around here. He's going to have more value to the Patriots than any other team, so they'll be able to put him on waivers and then stash him on the
practice
squad. I don't
know. If he has a good preseason, like Austin Carr, right? We all said that about Austin Carr, and they tried to get him to the practice squad, and the Saints claimed him.
I wouldn't bank on it. I think he could still stay on the practice squad. And when I say Edelman, I mean like he has potential to develop into something, you know, year four or five.
Sure.
Then he can step in and suddenly take on a major role once he's ready.
Yeah.
I don't know that he's ready just yet, but it is, I mean, it's good that he's showing a step forward in camp. I just try not to – I've seen enough camps where, like, I just try not to buy into it when a guy's, you know, playing out of his mind in camp.
Well, that's,
it doesn't really show up in the game. We saw that with Wilkerson last year.
He's got a ways to go, and especially with Nixon, they were all non-padded practices, right? Let's see what happens. And the speed, that helps the speed, guys. Let's see what happens when he can get knocked around a little bit. Tight ends, Devin Asiasi, Hunter I was doing it alphabetically or by number. Let's go with the depth chart here.
Devin Asiasi, number one tight end.
I always do it alphabetically when I list it on the website so people can't complain to me about the depth chart. Jonnu Smith, Hunter Henry, those are your top two, I guess, in the other order. Hunter Henry, Jonnu Smith, Devin Asiasi, Dalton Keene, and then Matt Sokol.
I mean, I got nothing for Matt Sokol. I don't see him making the team.
Okay. He could be a practice squad. Like, they like to keep one of those veteran tight ends on the practice squad.
Yeah.
Matt Lacoste, right?
Right.
I could see him being, like, that kind of player.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, let's focus on the guys
let's that
are
definitely going to play chart.
Hunter
yeah.
Henry, the biggest thing last year for him is that he stayed healthy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like,
yeah,
that was a
season.
Big question. I think you still got to ask that question. He's got to be able to sustain that kind of consistency and dependability because
sure.
he turned out to be a dependable player on the field.
He's kind of in that Binky category, too, a little bit.
Yeah, I think he should hopefully develop more as a red zone third down type of guy for Matt Jones.
Yeah.
He was a little bit of that last year, but maybe you could see more of that consistently on a week-to-week basis this year. Because that is the thing. It's like not just like who's going to be his go-to guy. Who's going to be the guy on third
on
and
third
eight,
down. And
third
that's
and
so,
long.
I think
know?
Henry was the guy in the red zone last year, but third down, it did feel like they were looking at times. So I would love to see if Henry could emerge in that role. That would be big.
Yeah, and Jonnu Smith, I'm not giving up on him yet. I know everybody wants to just give up on him. It's all over because he had that 1 year. He didn't do anything. His biggest highlights were his gaffes, you know, turning the ball over.
Right.
And I get it. It was a tough first year for him, but a lot of guys come here, they have a rough first year, and then they figure it out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not ruling out that Jonnu Smith is going to figure it out, and this is going to be potentially like a whole new offensive system. We're in the post-McDaniels era, and it seems like Bill Belichick's running the offense now. And I don't know if you want to call it simplifying, whatever you want to call it. Like maybe Bill knows how to get more out of Jonnu Smith than Josh McDaniels does. And Jonnu Smith did flash. I mean, he made plays whenever he caught, you know, a screen pass. He was really good at yards after the catch. So, I mean, he did flash some ability. And he's obviously an athlete. And so I have confidence that Bill is going to get the most out of him. And I don't know that he's going to, you know, emerge as a top target on the team or anything, but he can't possibly give you less than he did last year, so he can only go up.
I think they tried. I think they tried to use him as a more traditional tight end last year, and that's just not his role. He's an H-back, right? And
yeah.
If they're going to make some of these changes, like we've heard with the Shanahanization of the offense, or even just an offense that involves more motion, he's a guy, just get him the ball in space. It doesn't have to be down the field. Just get him the ball in space, he'll make plays. I almost wonder if he could contribute in that third down back role, because I think that's something that he could be really good with, moving him off motion, out of the backfield, getting him in mismatches. I think the new offense could be set up for him to succeed. So I'm in the same boat as you, where I think he could have a bounce back year this year.
You're saying Shanahan, do you think he could be like a Kyle Juszczyk type?
It would be like a little bit in between how they use Juszczyk and Kittle. But yeah, okay. I mean, that's a fair...
Right, I wasn't going to go Kittle.
So, I mean, we're talking about usage, not results. But
right,
there
is
some of that, you know. So I think that's fair. The one other question here, obviously, that gets interesting is, do they keep a third tight end? Devin Asiasi, Dalton Keene, top 101 picks, both of them. And not much yet from either guy. This is going to be their third year, so not quite a contract year, but... does one of those guys manage to stick? And it goes back to what we talked about before. You can only keep so many players, and the skill position players sometimes get bunched together. And, you know, if they're going to keep seven wide receivers, that probably means two tight ends. You know, things like that. If they're going to keep all the backs, that probably means two tight ends. Can one of those guys beat out maybe J.J. Taylor or beat out, you know, that seventh receiver for that spot?
Yeah, Henry and Smith are in. And, I mean, Asiasi tried to, you know, contribute in other ways just to be able to, like, you know, sort of keep getting on the field. Like, they used him as a blocker at times, you know, schemes where you would just use a tight end to block. So, I mean, I don't know how much upside he has in that regard. He probably needs to improve as a pass catcher to really make headway on this roster here. But, Yeah, he seems to me like a guy who could have like a solid camp, but just turn out to be a trade candidate. And, you know, the Patriots end up getting whatever they can for him.
Offensive line, we've got, I'm just going to do this one alphabetically because it's a lot.
All right.
Trent Brown, Yodney Kajust. Actually, I can go by position. So tackles, Trent Brown, Yodney Kajust, Yasir Durant.
It's Kajust.
Isn't it? Is it?
It's Kajust.
Okay, Yodney right. Kajust, Yasir Durant, Justin Heron, William Sherman, and Isaiah Wynn. And then on the interior, Drew Desjarlais. Good, you know, fit with the Bruins with that name. Sure. Yasir Durant also listed as a guard. I don't know about that. James Ferentz, Arlington Hambright, Michael Onwenu, rookie UDFA Cody Roussey. Of course, Cole Strange, another rookie, Darrell Williams. Then you have Chasen Hines and Andrew Stuber on the NFI list. They're both rookies, the last two picks in the draft. And David Andrews is on PUP. We talked to him today, though. He said that the goal right now is week one. He expects he'll be back for week one. And he's not a guy I'm going to worry about missing time in camp. Not entirely. I more so worry about, and this is where we can start with the offensive line, what we saw in the spring with Wynn and Brown flipping. Obviously, both of last year's, they started a number of guards last year, but the end combination, the main combination of Shaq Mason and Ted Karras, those guys are both gone. You could, in theory, week one, have four offensive linemen starting at new spots. They're not all new players, right? Brown and Wynn have been here, and Onwenu's been here, but those three guys didn't start at those spots last year, and then obviously Cole Strange is a rookie. That's going to test the communication, and we saw it early last season. Offensive line communication with moving pieces was a struggle. David Andrews is going to be a huge, huge part of that as the one guy who's back where he's been, is kind of the rock of that offensive line. So that's why I worry maybe a little bit about him missing time in camp, but he can, you know, still talk to guys. They can still work through stuff. He said he's been in the building for the last week with Mac, going through communication, through calls, things like that. So I don't worry a ton about David Andrews missing time. I do have a little bit of pause with how many moving pieces there are on this offensive line right now.
Yeah, I mean, well, the biggest concern with communication for me would be with the rookie, would be with Cole Strange, because he's just, he's new to this. And, like, that doesn't mean I think Cole Strange is going to be a bust or anything. I think he's going to be a
it means
good...
you think he'll be horrible.
No, I think he's going to be a good, I think he's going to be a good starting guard. He's going to be good right away. I mean, I can't help but have confidence in Bill Belichick picking offensive linemen, especially that high in the draft. So I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. Bill's going to prove some people wrong with that draft selection that people were surprised with, the Cole Strange. Owenu, I'm not worried about. He played right guard at Michigan, so I think maybe he'll settle in. He'll be comfortable there. Flipping the tackles, I guess, would be my biggest concern schematically, because it's like Isaiah Wynn's been a left tackle his whole career. Switch to the right. Maybe this is just because this is how my brain is wired. I feel like I would get all discombobulated if all of a sudden I had to do a flip, a mirror image of everything I was doing before, going from the left to the right. But I mean, we all saw what Trent Brown could do at left tackle when he was here in 2018.
Love Trent Brown. And, I love Trent Brown at left tackle. And Wynn gives me some pause, but I don't have many qualms outside of him staying healthy.
Right.
I don't have any qualms
about
Trent Brown on the left side.
My number one concern, really, if you put all the concerns into a bucket, the number one concern for me is Trent Brown's health. He got hurt immediately last year, and then so that's part of the reason they had trouble early in the season, because they immediately lost Trent Brown. They had everything all set up. They were looking great on that first drive, and just poof, he's gone. So Trent Brown better stay healthy now. I mean, is Trent Brown in a contract year? Like, he might have something
like
to play for.
It's a 2-year, but it's...
But he must have incentives where, like, he...
Well, he has all those weight incentives.
He is incentivized to be in better shape, and I mean, it probably is.
It is an incentive-heavy contract now that I think about it, you're right.
Yeah, his weight probably does play a role in the lower body injuries he's had. So, hopefully that works out. Hopefully he stays healthy. Obviously, hope the whole line stays healthy. Barth, I know it's not a popular thing to say anything remotely nice about Matt Patricia, but it seems like Matt Patricia is basically the offensive line coach right now.
Yes.
And I don't feel too bad about it. He was an offensive lineman. He came into the league coaching offensive linemen. Under Scarnecchia, Dante Scarnecchia. Do I want him to be the head coach of the Patriots? No. Do I think he's ever going to be a good head coach in the NFL? No. Can he be an assistant who can coach something that he's coached before? I think he can do that.
Yeah, I'm not super worried about. I also really like Billy Yates, who's his assistant. That's not to take anything away from
Patricia. He seems like the real up and comer. Like, Patricia's not going to be here forever, and he'll be the offensive line.
So I'm not super. Of all their coaching situations, and I think a lot of the coaching worries are overblown. Some of them are valid. I'm not going to lose sleep over the offensive line coaching situation. One more on the
That's good, Martha. I was worried about you for a second.
One more. Well, it's funny. I was on with Sean Silver last night, and I don't remember it came up. He was asking me, like, do people I work with get frazzled by me? And so your name came up naturally.
I get frazzled all the time.
And I said that our working relationship is basically you come up with some hyperbole to describe how obsessed or dedicated or whatever I am to football, and then like it ends up being true, it ends up not being a hyperbole, and then
the perception becomes reality,
right? And then you just kind of, you know, having to doubt that. So there you go. One more on the offensive line real quick, because we all know the Patriots, the UDFA streak, right? Who's it going to be? So this guy's not, we'll get to who my favorite is to extend the streak. I would say this guy's probably my second or third. I'll call him my second. I'll call him my runner-up to extend the UDFA streak. And that's Cody Roosie, who's a center from Houston. Six-year player, 60-game starter, multiple program, team captain. Pats were at his pro day. You know, we all know they love James Ferentz, right? But he strikes me as a guy who can come in, be a, you know, backup interior offensive lineman, a guy you can trust, a guy you can plug and play. Maybe he stays with Ferentz, but he's somebody I could see pushing Ferentz for that backup center role.
Okay.
And obviously, being on a UDFA contract is going to be more affordable. That could maybe be what it takes to tip the scales. So
it's the battle everyone's going to be talking about.
Well, people always ask, you know, who's your UDFA to watch? I'll give you one on offense, one on defense. So we'll get to the defensive one here, actually, in just a second. But Cody Roosie's my offensive one. The defensive line, Henry Anderson, Christian Barmore, Carl Davis, Daniel Okwale, Devon Godshaw, Lawrence Guy, DeMarcus Mitchell, a UDFA, Bill Murray, Jeremiah Farms, another rookie, LeBrian Ray, another UDFA, Sam Roberts was a late draft pick, he's a rookie, and then Dietrich Wise. Where you at with the defensive line?
I don't feel great about it. I've been telling you in previous podcasts, you remember I kept saying before the draft I want them to get a defensive lineman. I would have loved it if they took a defensive lineman instead of Cole Strange up there in the first round, Logan Hall out of Houston, someone like that. I think there's just too much being put on Christian Barmore to make an impact, and I think he will make an impact. I love Christian Barmore. I mean, he was surprisingly good, surprisingly productive for a rookie, and you know, it's not often that you see a rookie not only play that much but make that much of an impact here. I think he has a chance to be, you know, a Pro Bowl, maybe even All Pro caliber defensive tackle, like production wise, anyway. But I just think you're putting too much on him. I just don't think there's going to be enough around him where you're going to be able to open up enough opportunities. Everyone's just going to say, just put 2-3 guys on Christian Barmore and everything else will be fine. So, I mean, that's what I'm worried about. Maybe you feel better about their ability to stop the run, because I know that's been an issue in the last couple of years. But to me, still the main thing is getting after the quarterback. And I think Christian Barmore is going to be able to do that, but I don't see really anybody else in that group that would scare me if I'm an opponent.
Well, let's remember, he was doubled more than any defensive tackle in football last year as a rookie. So right, and he's still not used to it.
And yeah, he's still beat double teams.
I mean, I think Barmore is the key here, right? You're counting on him to take a big jump and kind of carry this group. But something else I think, and this is kind of a theme throughout the defense, you're looking for guys you brought in to be impact players who, and some of them not at any fault of their own, haven't been. Guys who are either buried on the depth chart or were hurt. And that's not just rookies, and we'll get into some guys, or that's not just draft picks. We'll get into some guys who are draft picks who fit that category. That's more at the linebacker position in the secondary. But I look at a guy, for instance, like Devon Godshaw, right? They brought him in last year to be the nose tackle, to be that space eater. He wasn't great. He did play well occasionally. He's a 3-tech and a 5-tech.
So he had a couple good games, but, you know, other than that.
Well, I wonder now, with the whole offseason to reset it, do we get more of Devon Godshaw playing on the end? Not as an edge, but that big defensive
right.
end. That
the five technique, right?
Right. I mean, he talked about last year when he signed here how big of a Vince Wilfork fan he was, and we would see Vince do that from time to time where they'd put Alan Branch or whoever on the inside. Earlier on, it was Ted Washington, and Vince would be that end, and it was just such a mismatch. Can Devon Godshaw give you some of that, especially to help stop the run, like you said? Maybe, you know, more of a three-down guy. Henry Anderson, somebody was signed last year. Everybody was talking about what a fit he was. Had a bit of a slow camp. Got hurt early in the season. Didn't play. Can he give you a little bit more?
Yeah, I think if he can stay healthy, he can set an edge. I think he'll be a little better against the run if he stays healthy. But just the fact that you're hinging so much on him, I think, is that in itself is a bad thing.
It's not great to kind of, you know, count on these unknowns to hold it down, but I think there is some untapped potential there. You also have Dietrich Wise, who, I mean, he's going to give you what he gives. He's a good, solid player. Lawrence guy as well. You're looking to maybe elevate. The one other guy here I'm very excited to watch at camp, Matt, is LeBryan Ray. This is my other UDFA. This is my favorite to extend that UDFA streak.
I got to brush up on the UDFAs, to be perfectly honest.
So when LeBryan Ray played at Alabama, he was a difference maker. I think had all things worked out for him at Alabama, he's probably a late day two, early day three pick, right? Third, fourth round. Unfortunately for LeBryan Ray, he only played 36 games in 5 years. He struggled to stay healthy pretty much throughout. I think he only played double-digit games. Oh, no, he played double-digit games twice.
Bill loves taking guys like that.
Well, so here's the thing. He didn't take him. He signed him as an undrafted free agent. There's no risk
there.
Him
off the street.
If LeBryan Ray stays healthy, LeBryan Ray's a legitimate NFL end setter. I truly believe that.
Okay.
I think he could be, you know, I was a big Lawrence Guy fan in his prime. I think Lawrence Guy's, he's still a good player. He's taken a step back since when he first got here. Like that.
Which is fair.
Early Lawrence Guy, when he first got here, like he's 6'5", 270. They'll probably put some weight on him, 280, 285. A three-down player who can play, you know, on the outside against the run, set the edge against the run, and then maybe give you some snaps as a bigger pass rusher in interior, in obvious passing situations. I really like LeBryan Ray. I think he can find a rotational role on this team. Also, by the way, fun fact, Christian Barmore's college roommate.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. I like Sam Roberts, the guy they drafted. I think he has potential to, you know, like
so it's
Adam,
that same mold. He's just a little more raw.
Right, yeah. Like Adam Butler wasn't a great player, but he made some plays. He had a little bit of an impact.
Careful what you say about Adam Butler. I was the head of the Adam Butler fan.
Well, I'm just saying he wasn't like a stud, but he was a good player. He was a good solid player, and he was undrafted. So it's like I have confidence that they could get something out of the lower drafted defensive player. I just would have loved if they got more of a guy that has like a potential to make an impact.
But, higher floor is what you're looking for.
Yeah, yeah.
I like Robert Seale. Look, the 5 blocked kicks in college. It tells you everything about like his ability to get off the edge, the length, all of that. But yeah, he's a project player. Him and Ray are kind of two sides of the same coin where you see why they're here. And there's a lot of reasons to get excited about them. But there is also a big question mark that you have to address with Robert. It's adjusting to, you know, going from Division II to the NFL level, and can he make that jump and round out his game? With Ray, it's can he stay on the field? If he stayed healthy, he would not have gone undrafted. Mm-hmm. He was, again, a projected third or fourth round pick heading into, I think he was a 5-star high school recruit. I think he was a top 20 high school recruit. Like, this is a guy that can play. It's just availability is the best ability, right? And that's
an issue. Yep, especially here.
Linebackers. This is the one you can really sink your
teeth
in.
This is the big one.
No. No, this is a really fun position to break down. On the inside, we'll go with the inside first. You've got Juwan Bentley. You've got Raekwon McMillan. Mac Wilson. You've got... Who am I missing here? Cameron McGrone. Sorry, they have him listed as an outside linebacker here. I'm using Wikipedia for some reason. So Mac Wilson, Raekwon McMillan, Cameron McGrone, Juwan Bentley, and then Harvey Longy, who's kind of a special teamer. Your inside linebackers on the edge, Matthew Judon, first and foremost. You've also got Josh Uche, big year for him. Ronnie Perkins, big year for him. You've got Anthony Jennings, and nobody on the PUP. Oh, right, McMillan got activated. So those are your linebackers.
Yeah, I mean, I still feel good about Matt Judon. Matt Judon needs to put it together for a full season. I don't know what the hell happened to him down the stretch last year. Seems like he was running out of gas, or he was playing through an injury that was more serious than we thought. But that defense was cooking when it had Judon and Christian Barmore both healthy, both playing at a high level. So I think as long as they have those two healthy playing their best football, they'll have a decent front seven. And linebacker, like, I'm not as worried as other people are. Like, I'm not either.
I'm glad to hear you say that.
It's fair to be worried. It's fair to have questions, thoughts, concerns, as like my middle school teachers used to say. I get it. They're unproven. You know, Josh Uche didn't play a lot last year, even though he looked so good in training camp. I think it just turned out that Bill just leaned too much on the veterans.
He got buried.
He leaned too much on Dante Hightower and Kyle Van Noy to to carry that group. And now those guys are gone. He's basically forcing himself to go to a youth movement at linebackers. And Josh Uche was the fastest, most explosive guy on that defense last year, in camp anyway. So I think there's going to be more of that. You know the speed's there. And maybe it was just a trust thing. Like, you know, it's not – Dont'a Hightower didn't have a great second year, and he sort of popped in his third year. So I'm, like, hoping for something similar with Josh Uche. So I'm not out on him. They like Cameron McGrone. They're talking a lot about Cameron McGrone. They've been talking him up. And that Cameron McGrone, to me, was always the sign that they had already moved in that direction, that they need a shiftier, speedier sort of inside linebacker who could maybe cover and do different things and be versatile. And I think they already, like, people were calling for that in the draft, and I was saying they have McGrone. I think that's going to be their guy. So, and I know that's a bit of a risk because he was a fifth-round pick and hasn't played in the NFL yet. So there's risk there, you know, but, like, I'm intrigued. I'm interested to see what they look like. I don't think it's going to be a complete disaster. They are going to be faster and more athletic. And, like, I guess the question is, can they play? Do they know how to play the position? Or do they have a, you know, football instincts, football IQ, all that stuff? So, I mean, that remains to be seen until they actually play the games. But I feel good about where they are, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that they have questions, but all the questions are answerable. I think they have the answers in-house. It's just sorting it out, right? You have,
yeah.
Juwan Bentley's going to be your early down run-stopping linebacker. We know that. He's back. Who's going to play next to him as the off-the-ball middle linebacker? We don't know, but I'll say this.
Could that be situation-dependent?
So I think you'll end up with a rotation, but between Mac Wilson, Cameron McGrone, Raekwon McMillan, I one of those guys is going to pan out. There's too much talent there for none of those guys to pan out, and I think, like you just said, they all give you something a little different. McMillan can play east to west, but he's a run stopper.
Well, if you make me pick one, I'd say McMillan, because he was looking good last year in camp.
I'm a big fan of his. He's not Bentley, like, he's more mobile, but he is that run stopping linebacker. Mac Wilson's almost a safety. He's a coverage linebacker. And I think Cameron McGrone's skill set somewhere in the middle. So that can be situational, it can be a rotation, but, like, I like all of those guys. I think you can feel encouraged, even though we don't have the exact answer of who it's gonna be. I think with any one of those guys, you're in pretty good shape. Same thing on the edge, opposite Matthew Judon, replacing Kyle Van Noy. Important role. But I think between Josh Uche, I'm still not giving up on Anthony Jennings. I still think Anthony Jennings can give you something. He wasn't bad last year. He didn't play. He was hurt.
He can still be an edge setter, and that to me is another guy that, like, he just got buried because Bill just insisted on Hightower and Van Noy every play.
And then
Jamie Collins, too.
Ronnie Perkins as well. I'll throw him into this, right?
Perkins, yeah.
This is what I said. Like, you're counting on those guys, like I said before, about Anderson, Henry Anderson, Devon Godshaw. It's the same idea, but with draft picks. You know, between the three of those guys, and they all give you something a little different. Uche's more of a pure pass rusher. Anthony Jennings is really an edge setter. And I think that Ronnie Perkins is the guy that exists somewhere in between, right? Maybe it's a rotation between those three guys. Maybe it's situational. Maybe it's a game plan thing. But I think between those three guys, you're going to be able to fill that role.
Yeah.
Can we sit here today and say who it's going to be? Definitively, no. So it is still a question. But it's a question that they have the pieces in place to answer. Unlike the cornerback position.
What a transition.
This is where it gets a little different. We'll go through real quick here. And again, we're going to split into two. On the boundary, you have Jalen Mills is back. And then you have Terrence Mitchell, Malcolm Butler, Jack Jones, the rookie, Juwan Williams. And then in the slot, you have Jonathan Jones is back. And then behind him, you have Miles Bryant, Marcus Jones, the rookie. And then Sean Wade's kind of a floater. He can play both in the slot on the outside. I'll throw Justin Bethel in here, too, as a boundary corner. He's done some of that. Jalen Mills is going to be your number one boundary corner, and he was good last year. Like, I'm comfortable with that.
He was fine.
He's not J.C. Jackson. He's not Stephon Gilmore, but I think he can hold his own. After that, it's wide open. And, like, I just went through those guys before at linebacker, right? And there's reasons to be encouraged. With corner, it's you're trying to, you know, buck trends, buck history here. Malcolm Butler was good last time he played. That was 2 years ago. He's had a year off. Look at, and statistics mean nothing to the individual, but look at the history of corners over the age of 30 in recent years. There were only six corners over the age of 30 that played 10 or more games last year. So can Butler...
They were all on the Patriots.
Can Butler be the difference? It's possible, but, you know, history tells us that that's kind of an uphill battle. Jack Jones looked good in the spring, but it's like Trey Nixon. He's a rookie, Trey Nixon's not a rookie, but Jones young. He's a rookie, non-contact practices. He's got a long way to go. Juwan Williams, I know you're not high on him. You just wrote something about him.
But he's gone.
They need boundary corners. He's on the roster. He's a boundary corner. by default, he finds himself in this competition.
When Mike Reese says you could be the next to go, he's next to go.
All right, that's fair. I like where they're at in the slot. Jonathan Jones coming back is huge.
I think in the slot, they're elite. As long as they have Jonathan Jones back, healthy. Miles Bryant was fine. You know, he's not going to be a great slot corner, but he's a fine backup. And Marcus Jones, I'm pretty high on.
I love Marcus Jones. I
think they're going to defend the slot extremely well this year. It's on the boundary.
And they're going to have to.
Yeah, and the much bigger questions are on the boundary. And, you know, I like Jack Jones. I didn't see him at minicamp, but he obviously made waves. He made a big impression there. I think he does have a chance to start just because of who they have. I mean, who knows if Malcolm Butler's even going to make the team, to be honest. Like, I know he's a name.
Right.
He has familiarity, but he's 32 years old. He didn't play for a year. Who knows how much he even has left? And I feel like they could, if they feel like they could get a similar level of performance out of Jack Jones, which I think they could, then they'll save themselves a little bit of money and they'll move on from Malcolm Butler and Jack Jones will be the starter. So, but I mean, the fact that you're talking about a rookie and Jalen Mills, who's fine, good, maybe, but not great, like that. That to me is the most concerning position on the team going into camp. To be honest, I think so. I
mean, boundary corner specifically,
right?
Yeah,
yeah. Like, I'm concerned about the defensive line, but they at least have guys that can make big plays in that group. Cornerback, I'm not so sure they have anyone.
It felt like they were short last year, and they haven't added.
Yeah, and they had J.C. Jackson, who was like a borderline All-Pro.
Yeah, I'm still, and the thing is, you said, you know, if they like Jack Jones, maybe they move on from Malcolm Butler. They really like to have three boundary corners and rotate guys and stay fresh.
Sure.
You go back, I mean, the ultimate was when they had Gilmore, J.C. Jackson, and Jason McCourty in that rotation too. And you stay fresh and you kind of fresh legs up against some of these more tired wide receivers late in games. We're kind of scratching our heads on number two right now. Forget three.
So. Yeah, I mean, yeah, the depth is going to be a concern. This strikes me as a group that Bill will get the most out of them, and they'll look great for a while, but then they'll run into a deep receiving core. Like, they play the Bengals this year, is that
they
correct?
They do, yes.
Yeah, like, I feel like they're ripe to look good and then all of a sudden run into the Bills and the Bengals and get exposed. I mean, that would be my concern.
This is a spot I would think, and they always like to add throughout training camp, maybe make a big deal right before the season. This is a spot I think very realistically you could see them add during camp. I don't think that group stays the way it is during camp. I think you see a name or names added to that. So you said earlier you thought running back was the deepest position on the roster. I would counter safety. You've got Devin McCourty's back leading that group. Kyle Duggar, Adrian Phillips. They add Jabril Peppers as well for legit NFL safeties, guys that can do a lot. Joshua Bledsoe's healthy this year as well. And then they have Brandon Schooler, rookie UDFA.
I think that's fair. I can't really dispute that too much, to be honest. It's definitely the deepest position on the defense, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's going to be the engine of the secondary. I said it in our last podcast. I said it when we did the Adam Jones show a couple weeks ago. I think that is going to be the true driver of the secondary. And I feel like they want to build the defense from the inside out. And I don't know if they're right or wrong in that approach. But, you know, slot receivers, tight ends, they're all the rage right now. And, like, you know, the big outside receiver is still a thing. But I think as long as they could take away the middle of the field, they'll feel pretty good about the offense, forcing quarterbacks to throw outside the whole game. And I feel like the safeties are going to be a major factor in that. I love the Jabril Peppers signing.
Yep.
Hopefully he stays healthy, and I think the Bills going to get the most out of him than any of his other teams ever could have. So, yeah, I feel great about the safeties.
And I would not be surprised if we see all four of those guys on the field together at times.
Right.
I really
yeah.
wouldn't. And
what would you even call that?
So here's the thing.
The very big nickel.
Somebody asked me that
the other day. The jumbo nickel.
Is it nickel? Is it dime? Well, here's where I'd flip it back on you, and we're getting into semantics here. But if Adrian Phillips is on the field handling a pure linebacker responsibility, like, what is he? You know, I'll go back to what I said before about Ty Montgomery.
Football.
The two letters, or in this case, it's just an S, I guess, they're safeties, or Patriots list them as DBs.
Right.
The two letters next to the name on the roster don't mean anything. Yeah, if you have a safety that's out there handling linebacker responsibilities, he might just be a linebacker, right? And they have guys that can do that. Jabril Peppers plays everywhere. Last year, or 2 years ago, before he got hurt, his last full season, he played boundary corner, slot corner, deep safety, box safety, and defensive end, and linebacker. Like, so, you know, if Jabril Peppers has his hand in the ground next to Christian Barmore, oh, but he's a safety. That's a nickel. Like, it's more complicated than that. But the beauty of that is,
You hear that, Twitter?
You can really
That's Barth's Twitter idiot voice.
You can really disguise your defensive looks and kind of make things difficult for offenses. So I'm really excited about this group. I think there's a lot of upside here. I think those four are all great fits. They play well off each other. They play well in the context of this defense. I'm a big Jabril Peppers guy. I wrote when they signed him. I thought that was a massive untapped potential signing. The one other thing I'll add at safety, I'll round out my top three UDFA list. Brennan Schooler, converted wide receiver, ended up playing safety, went from Oregon to Texas. Impressive physical profile. I don't know that he ends up playing a ton of safety for them, but Nate Ebner is a guy who creeps into mind when I look at him. I think, you know, as they kind of reworked his special teams unit, Brandon King is gone, Brandon Bolden's gone, Matthew Slater's year to year. He's a guy I think could end up on the team. Maybe not this year. Maybe he goes practice squad and then it's down the road, but he's somebody I think who they've identified as a potential future core special teamer and a guy who could fit in that role. So there's the third UDFA.
Sounds good to me. I like Schooler based on what you're telling me.
Well, you got one more group. The specialists.
Oh, God. All right. We could do a whole hour on this.
We've got the kickers, Nick Folk, Tristan Vizcaino. Quinn Nordine is on NFI. He's still technically on the team. Jake Bailey's back as your punter. You got Jake Julian as well, a UDFA. Joe Cardona's your long snapper entering a contract year. And then Matthew Slater, Cody Davis.
I'm not worried about the roster. I'm worried about the coaching when it comes to the special teams.
Fair.
You know, how many punts did they have blocked last year?
Too many.
Jake Bailey, not a great year. The blocking wasn't up to par. I just don't know what's going on there behind the scenes. I don't know what's going on with Cam Accord, who's back as the special teams coordinator. To me, it's special teams is really more about coaching than talent. It's more about execution and everyone being on the same page. So that's what I'm going to be looking for. And, like, I'm not worried about Nick Folk. You know, I still like Nick Folk. It's crazy how consistent he's been and how he's really had this career renaissance when it felt like his career was winding down. And now it's in, his third, fourth year with the Patriots, and he's been really good. I like that they kept Quinn Nordine. Like, I don't know if he's going to contribute, within the next year or two. But, you know, you got to keep – I think that if they like a guy, then you got to keep at it with him. See how it goes. And that's a guy with upside, with the kind of leg strength where if you can get him to be more accurate and consistent, then you could have a really good kicker. So I'm not worried about that. I think Bailey needs to sort of bounce back from sort of a down year, but I'm not worried about him. We saw him put together an all-pro performance. We know the talent's there. To me, it's really just about the coaching and execution, to be honest.
Yeah, I think Folk, like you said, I mean, he's 38, kicking's fickle, but he was excellent last year. Bailey looked great in the spring, and he was working through an injury last year. He looked healthy. He looked really good. Jake Julian's got some intriguing traits, but he's not on Bailey's level. I know people think Bailey, he has that contract. They can get out of $4 million if they cut him. It's more realistic they give him an extension, I think, than move on to Jake Julian. Joe Cardona, consummate pro. Slater running that coverage unit. Feel good about that. So there you go. I do agree the coaching's going to be interesting. Funny enough, right? At the end of the season, we all thought, well, Cam Accord's gone. You know, we thought, well, McDaniels is still here. It looked like he was getting passed up for all the jobs. The defense is going to be the same. Cam Accord's the only coordinator the Patriots currently employed by title.
He's like at the top of the list. He's like the top of the list of who needs to have a bounce back year.
Yeah.
Cam Accord, he's very vocal down there on the field.
I love Cam Accord, like, as a football
player. I'm watching him at that camp. I love his style. He gets in your face. You know, he makes sure you hear about it if you're doing something wrong.
He's a football coach. He couldn't be anything else.
It just doesn't seem that it really translated, so I don't know. We'll see. Maybe another year in this with everyone else.
The 2020 year was good, to be fair. It was very good in 2020.
Oh, that's true. Okay, because I was thinking, like, when they had Joe Judge as the special teams coordinator, their special teams were impeccable.
That was 19. So, yeah, okay. Ford came in 2020. They had two All-Pros. They had Bailey and Olszewski, and that's the other thing with special teams.
Right, so it makes you wonder what the hell happened there.
The kick and punt return battles are going to be fun. You got Marcus Jones, who was an All-American kick returner. Jabril Peppers was an excellent punt returner at Michigan. Tyquan Thornton might factor into that conversation. So that's going to
be fun. Right. Gunnar Olszewski's gone.
Yep.
So Gunnar Olszewski is gone to the Steelers. So, yeah, we're going to have to find out the new punt returner and kick returner. So that'll be an interesting one.
All right. So there you go. We said we were going to keep this to 30 minutes, and now we're going to have to run out of here to get to camp in time tomorrow morning. We will have complete total coverage from training camp. Myself, Matt, Bob Soucy will be down there. Zolak and Bertrand broadcasting live. So
maybe even Ty Anderson will contribute.
Is Ty coming down?
I don't think he's coming down, but he's got takes.
Okay.
He's got Patriots
all
takes.
Right. Love that. All of it, 98.5thesportshub.com. Again, you can even listen to live broadcasts from camp. We will be doing this podcast daily. I think it's going to be about 50-50, Matt
you'll
versus
be,
guests.
Say you'll be doing it daily.
I'm going to be doing it daily. Matt will be on quite a bit.
I don't have
and
the
then
breath
we'll
for
have,
that.
Other Patriots reporters on throughout camp. And it has a name now, so that's fun. I don't have to say, hey, will you come on this little podcast I do, I can say, will you come on the Sports Hub Patriots podcast?
So, and they'll say, yeah, sure. What's the name of the podcast?
And I can answer that question now. For Matt Dolph, I'm Alex Barth for the Sports Hub Patriots podcast. We will talk to you tomorrow from training camp, everybody.
Bye.